Good to see everyone here this morning. Appreciate your presence. So we've been singing this song about anywhere with Jesus. I hope that you've been thinking about the fact that every time you go anywhere, do anything, wake up in the morning, go to sleep, go to work, whatever, that you are living in such a way that that song is a reality in your life. Anywhere you go with Jesus is home. Anywhere you go with Jesus can be a house of praise. Perhaps you're going through your day facing some things that might be discouraging or whatever, and then you can turn right around because you have a right relationship with the Lord. You can still sing praise to Him and offer prayer to Him for strength and comfort. Those things, you know, we all go through life and there's ups and there's downs. There's things that may discourage us, disappoint us, or whatever. But as Philippians 4 verse 13 says, we can do all things through Him that strengthens us. And that's just the point. We have to learn to lean upon His strength. Our strength is insufficient. We, on our own strength and our own willpower and our own abilities and our own knowledge, will not make it to heaven. It is us leaning upon the Lord and looking to Him for strength and drawing from Him. That's how we'll make it. And the Lord has provided in His wisdom and in His true knowledge of how things work an arrangement where we can come together and assist one another and be an encouragement to one another. And I hope that you look at your brethren here seated in the pews this morning as a help to you and a strength to you and encouragement to you rather than maybe an enemy or just a rival or whatever. We should look at one another as an opportunity to grow, as one who will watch out for me when I stumble, who will watch out for you and be encouragement to one another. That's what we're about in serving the Lord. This morning, we're going to study about God's providence. God's providence. There's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, in the religious world. I think some of that comes from Pentecostal movement that takes all sorts of events in life and reads into it the miraculous. They'll talk about somebody who had cancer and goes through 6 months, 8 months of chemotherapy and all the surgeries and all this. And when they come out of it in remission, they say, oh, that was a miracle. And they interpret everything in that fashion, that it's a miracle. But that's not a miracle. It may be the providence of God, certainly the answer of prayer and a blessing when somebody recovers from illness. But that in itself is not a miracle because they went through the natural processes that are available in this life. That's different. That's not a supernatural thing. That's a natural process. But let's look, first of all, at some definitions. The word itself, providence, is not used in the Bible in connection with God's care. Though we read of passages that indicate that God cares and God takes care of things and God manages things and works through nature, at the same time, the word itself is not used in that context. We do see in Acts 24, verse 2, remember when Paul was being tried before various rulers, that there was one who stood up, a Tertullius, who was beginning to accuse Paul. And he speaks to the ruler here, and he says in verse 24, seeing that by thee we enjoy much peace, and that by thy providence evils are corrected for this nation, etc. Here he uses this in this intro to try to flatter this ruler, but he says, by thy providence. What this word means is simply to foresee or forethought. He's saying that to this ruler, you have had much insight, you've had forethought, you've had planning, and you've dealt with a lot of things and arranged it pretty well. That's the idea. Forethought, insight, to plan ahead or see ahead. In Romans chapter 13, we see the point. Now in verse 14, he says, but put you on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Here, it's not talking about a ruler. Here, it's talking about you and me. We are not to make provision for the lust of the flesh. We are not to plan ahead and to see down the road, well, how can I do this? And how can I get away with that? That's not how we're supposed to think and operate as Christians. We're to be rather planning ahead of how to avoid things rather than how we can get away with things. And so here we can see the idea, the word used in the Bible, though it's not in the context that we're addressing this morning. The concept, though, is in the Bible, and this is the word that we're going to use to capture that thought, but the concept is God's preparation, God's supervision, God's care through natural means. God does that. Yes, God is a miracle worker. God created the heavens and the earth, and God, through the Old Testament and into the New Testament times, worked miracles in revealing and confirming the Word. But as we studied this morning in our adult class here, and
hope that you were there for that. But 1 Corinthians 13, we addressed the fact that the time of miracles has been fulfilled. It had a point, and that was completed. So how is it that God has worked, not just during the time of miracles, but even up to this day and age? It is through natural means, through the things that He has created. And we talk about, first of all, general providence. Let's look at Psalm 104. Even during a time of miracles, God was not restrained or restricted so that the only way He could work was by miracles. God is a very powerful God, and He doesn't have to work an overt act on every single thing in order to be in control. Notice in Psalm 104, and let's start down in verse 10. Speaking of God, He says, He sendeth forth springs into the valleys. They run among the mountains. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. By them the birds of the heavens have their habitation. They sing among the branches. He watereth the mountains from His chambers. The earth is filled with the fruit of Thy works. He causeth the grass to grow for the cattle, the herb for the service of man, that He may bring forth fruit out of the earth. And He goes on and on. But just in this little clip, this little portion that we've read, what does it say? God's behind the springs that come up. You know, there's natural laws. We may not understand all the things involved, but how the water is there and underground and the aquifers and all those things that happen and how they come up and spring forth. But it happens. Who put that in order? Who put that in place? God did. And how is it that He talks about here that He brings forth the water from His chamber, speaking about rain? How is it that things evaporate and then they go through the air? Sometimes you can't see the clouds, but there's water there. And then they come together and then they pour forth on the earth, and the herb grows for the beasts and the crops grow for mankind. How did all that happen? Because God provided the means. God set the laws in order, which make the water evaporate at a certain temperature, and in certain conditions, it drops back down. And that water, when it hits the earth, those things combine in the sunlight, and the seeds bring forth the fruit. God set all those things in order. Now, He doesn't have to continually work miracles after He set it in order. It does what He has intended it for it to do. And He's able to work through natural things. God provides in that sense. Now look over in the New Testament. Let's just jump ahead to Matthew chapter 6. This is something you're probably more familiar with in Matthew chapter 6, verse 26. But He says here, we just read this was last Sunday as well. He says, "Behold the birds of the heaven, they that sow not, that they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather in barns, and your heavenly Father feedeth them." And here in the midst of talking about don't be anxious for what you have or what you need in this life, He says, here's the birds. They don't go out here and plow the fields like it's about time to do this time of year. And they don't expect to reap several months down the road. Why? Because God provides for them every day. They find food somewhere, don't they? Buds or grass or whatever it is that grows, they are taken care of. God provides for them. God cares for them. Now, if He cares for the birds, then certainly you're more valuable than birds, is His point. But notice the point there that He uses to illustrate that. God takes care of that. That's our point. Providence. The concept of God's preparation, God's supervision, God's care through natural means. He takes care of all those things. Now, one, that should be impressive of the fact of the great magnitude of God's comprehension. You know, sometimes when we keep pets, we try to teach our children to be responsible, and our children will forget to feed them, clean the cages, whatever. God takes care of not just one pet or two or three, or as some people might have, a dozen pets. God takes care of every single creature upon the face of the earth. The whole world. He takes care of it all. He provides for all of that. You think about the magnitude of His power and His wisdom to arrange it all and do all that. Matthew chapter 10, verse 29. He says,
verse 28, we'll start there. It says, "Be not afraid of them that kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. And are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them shall fall to the ground without your Father." The idea is without him knowing or being aware of it.
Here he is trying to reassure his disciples that you may face persecution, you may face intimidation. Don't you fear what man can do. God's in greater control. God's higher and more powerful. And he knows even all of these details, such as when a sparrow drops. When a sparrow, one sparrow drops, God knows. That's how much he knows. He knows all these things. There's nothing that is overlooked by him. And so when we talk about natural processes and natural law, that's not denying the fact that God in the past has worked through miracles. It's simply acknowledging the fact that God is able to control things in this way, in this fashion as well. We look at Matthew chapter 5 now, and let's look specifically at some things of how this relates to mankind and God's care for man. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 45, in the midst of talking about not hating your enemy, but rather loving them and praying for them, he says that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sendeth the rain on the just and the unjust. This passage, I think, hits on a point that we're emphasizing. Not just the providence, but this is why I put the word general providence. Matthew 5, verse 45, his providence in a general sense of caring for the necessities in a physical sense affects everyone. In Matthew 5, verse 45, he sends the sun and the rain not just upon the just, but also upon the unjust. There are many people in the world who have lived wickedly, who have not submitted themselves to God, and yet they have days of sunshine, and they have rain to water their crops, just like we do. There's general care, general providence, blessings from God in a physical sense that are there by virtue of what He has created. That's what we're talking about in the sense of general providence. And in Acts chapter 14 and verse 17, we see this point made yet again. Here Paul and Barnabas are speaking to some who are about ready to worship them as deities because of the things they've done. But he's trying to discourage that and tell them about the true God. In Acts 14:17, he says, "And yet he, God, left not himself without witness, in that he did good and gave you from heaven rains and fruitful seasons, filling your hearts with food and gladness." And so he tries to appeal to the natural world and its processes and the benefits that come from it to let them realize, you know, this is one witness of God. You know, I was speaking with an elderly person one time. I don't remember who it was. It was not somebody here, but I can't remember the person's name. But they really captured the thought in just a very simple way. You know, sometimes people will explain a truth, but they explain it in a complicated way. It's hard to understand. Well, this person was not a super educated person, but I tell you what, they understood a profound truth. When they talked about the fact that God will take the green grass, which will be eaten by a black cow, turned into white milk, he says, "I cannot help but believe in God." When you think about how things are done and processed and changed and made useful. You know, I think about the grass and I think, boy, I've got to go mow that grass. That's a burden to me. But a farmer or a person who has animals and herds, they look at that grass and say, "That's food for my cattle. That's going to be productive. That's going to be beneficial." They see the benefit in that. It's just a different perspective. Understanding that there's value there. God has placed that value there. God has arranged it that way. And the Bible specifically addresses this as God's providence and a witness to His power and to who He is. And we need to recognize that. But let's look specifically at special providence. There are times that the Bible addresses that indicate that there are times when God, through natural means, has arranged things. Now again, it's not a supernatural thing. It's not that God has made void free will or anything of that nature. But through our choices and through natural law, certain things come together at the right place at the right time to accomplish something that's according to God's will. We call that special providence. Let's look at that just for a moment. In Psalm chapter 37, let's just read this psalm and look into what it has to say. He says in 37 verse 1, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against them that work unrighteousness, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in Jehovah and do good, dwell in the land, and feed on His faithfulness. Delight thyself also in Jehovah, and He will give thee the desires of thy heart. Commit thy way unto Jehovah, trust also in Him, and He will bring it to pass." Now, as we get a hint here, what's going on? Commit thy way unto Jehovah. Is that a miraculous thing in itself? You commit yourself to do what God says. Well, that God has already provided His Word, revealed that, and you submit yourself to it, and so you're conforming yourself. That's a natural process, aside from the fact that it was revealed miraculously. But what we're doing now, taking His Word, reading it, and understanding it. What do you think about it? There are things involved in that. Let's ask ourselves the question, do you know how to read? Most of us do. Some people I've known, some Christians I've known, don't know how to read. But you think about it. The fact that you are able to read, that's a result of, typically, public education systems. Some people homeschool. That's a result of natural processes, things we've done and been involved in this life. But you know what? That ability to read helps you to understand God's will so that then you can do it. That's a process. That's a provision that God has made and you've been benefited of. There are those who may not be able to read, but you know what? There are others who will read or stand in a pulpit or Bible class and read it and teach it. There's audio tapes. And those things have been provided, haven't they? Is that a miracle? No, it's not. But those things have come about through natural processes so that people can learn and understand. And then when they understand that, they can then commit themselves to doing the will of God. He goes on in verse 6, "And He will make thy righteousness to go forth as the light, and thy justice as the noonday. Rest in Jehovah and wait patiently for Him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass." So he's here giving comfort. You trust in Him. You rely upon Him. Now, is he saying expect a miracle in every case? I don't think he says this in this context. But you trust in Him. Wait for Him and expect Him to take care of these things. And so there's a reliance that we need to have upon God. Look over in Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5 and following. Again, this emphasis upon the trust of God. "Trust in Jehovah with all thy heart. Lean not upon thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct thy paths." Again, he hits home here to the fact that you trust in Him, and in everything you do, every way you go, you acknowledge Him. And when you do that, notice what's hand in hand with that. He will direct thy path. You acknowledge Him. Now, is that a supernatural act? Some people think conversion is a supernatural act, a miraculous thing. But here he says, you acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. God has, again, provided what we need to have and need to know so that when we yield to that, we're being guided by God. So a lot of people don't understand that. That's not a supernatural thing. That's providential. God has provided what we need to know, and we yield ourselves to His way. When we do that, that is being led or guided by God. Verse 7, "Be not wise in thine own heart. Fear Jehovah and depart from evil." You do it. You act this way, but God has provided the guidance that when you submit to it, is the very thing we need. God has provided, but this is not a supernatural thing He's describing in this moment. Again, Matthew chapter 6 in the New Testament, in verse 33, He tells us to seek ye first the kingdom of God, and then it gets back to talking about some of these other things that we've hit on already. Matthew 6:33, "Seek ye first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." And Matthew chapter 6, the context, has been talking about the necessities of life. Food and covering. Food and covering. You put God first, seek His kingdom first, His righteousness, and these things that we often so worry about and are consumed about, God will provide. Does that mean we have nothing to do in our responsibilities of obtaining food and clothing? Not saying that. We'll address that more as we go on. But we understand the point of priority, of trust, of faith in God. And we also understand He's provided an arrangement of things that we can take advantage of and use to take care of our necessities. God has provided them. Now, you think about the balance of this. God has provided things in such a way that it's not a free handout. It's not just, well, you lay there and somebody brings it to you no matter what. Because then we'd all get lazy and spoiled, wouldn't we? God has arranged it in such a way that we actually have to do something about it in order to obtain food and covering, to provide shelter for ourselves, to pay our bills and take care of things in life. God has arranged it so that we have to reach for it, don't we? God has done that so that we can learn things, not just so that we can obtain the physical necessities, but so that our character can be developed in the process. And our character can be exercised in the process. And all of that, through miracles? No, through providence. God has set up the system and so arranged it and so provided things that everything works in this way according to His will. Now Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, again, hits more closely to an expression of this idea of providence. He says, "And we know that to them that love God, all things work together for good, even to them that are called according to His purpose." Now you think about that for a moment. This is a very profound statement. All things work together for good, for your benefit, for your blessing, if you love the Lord. Whether it's a good day or a difficult day, you're being tempted and tried or persecuted, you think, well, how could that work together for good? Make you exercise your spiritual muscles, so to speak. Put you to the test so that you can choose to withstand that temptation and be stronger for it. That works for your good and for your benefit. Helps you to exercise your faith. Rather than being stagnant and growing stale and dying spiritually, now you're tested and you get stronger by resisting, and so you're strengthened. There's your benefit. All things work together for good for those who love the Lord. And here it is, a statement. Now, is that a miraculous thing that he's talking about? No, it's not. No, it's not. Acts chapter 23 is, I think, a good illustration of the providence of God. Again, notice that we're not talking about supernatural activity, a miraculous event. But Acts 23 and verse 12, if you remember, Paul has come to Jerusalem bearing a gift for the brethren who were needy, and he was found in the temple, and they thought, the Jews did, thought that he brought Gentiles into the temple, uncircumcised people. So they drug him out and started to beat him. Then the Romans rescued him, and they thought, well, he's some criminal, so we're going to interrogate him. Well, all this goes through, and the Jews try to get another trial there and get him out, and there's some who are plotting to put Paul to death. They come and ask the Romans to bring him out. Think, well, when they bring him out, we'll jump him and kill him. But notice in Acts 23, verse 12. "And when it was day, the Jews banded together and bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. And they were more than 40 that had made this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priests and the elders and said, 'We have bound ourselves under a great curse to taste nothing until we have killed Paul.' He says, 'Now therefore do ye with the council signify to the chief captain that he bring him down unto you as though you would judge of his case more exactly. And we, before he comes near, are ready to slay him.' But Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait, and he came and entered into the castle and told Paul." It goes on, Paul tells him, send him to the chief captain, and he tells him, and they make arrangements to take care of Paul. What do you think about this? Was that a miraculous event that thwarted their plot and their plan to murder Paul? No, it wasn't a miracle. Just so happened that Paul's sister's son happened to be in the right place at the right time to hear about this plot to give Paul a warning. Providence. God had plans for Paul, and it wasn't for him to die at that time. Paul's purpose and Paul's place was yet to preach the gospel, even in Rome, as we read later in the book of the Bible. It goes on, he finally is delivered to Rome and spends a great deal of time there teaching people. But if he had died at that point, he wouldn't accomplish that. But God didn't need to work a miracle to deliver Paul, did he? God arranged it, and God took care of things. That's through natural means, natural processes. Right time, right person, right place. Nobody's free will was violated. No miraculous event took place. But all by God's care and provision. Sometimes, as we mentioned just a moment ago, we may wonder how trials and temptations fit into the things that we're talking about. How do all things work together for good? How do trials and temptations, these things that weigh us down and discourage us, how does that fit? Well, as we mentioned in Romans chapter 5, in verse 3, he speaks about the hope and the glory and the grace that we're partakers of. And he says, not only so, but we also rejoice in our tribulations. Paul writes here and says, I can look at the trials and troubles that we face, and you too, and we can rejoice. Now, when you look at the things you face that are difficult and challenging, do you look at that and rejoice? You think, I want that to go away. I want it to stop, don't we? But Paul says, we can look at it from a different perspective. How so? Knowing that tribulation worketh steadfastness, and steadfastness approvedness, and approvedness hope, and hope putteth not to shame. Paul says, yes, there are the trials out here, and that's not fun in itself, but he says, I can see a benefit from it, therefore I can rejoice. Just like the athlete. You know, an athlete begins to look at the weights and the running of the track and the exercises, they look at it from a different perspective than some people do. Some people see all that running and weightlifting and they see the pain and they see the sweating and they see all the aches when you get up in the morning after your muscles are sore. They think, well, that's not something I want to do. But other people, like the athletes, look at it as, that's going to make me stronger. I'm going to be able to be more healthy, more active, and feel better in the end after I go through this exercise. And that's what Paul was saying about the trials and the difficulties. He says, rather than looking at them as an opportunity to give in to sin or as a burden, look at it from the biblical perspective of here is an opportunity to grow stronger, to prove myself faithful, and to live for the Lord and demonstrate my faith. That's what he's talking about. We talk about facing these things with joy. In Matthew chapter 7, we understand there's a very simple principle stated there in the context, I think, of physical things. But the principle applies. He speaks here about fathers who are not going to give a snake or a stone to a child that asks for bread or for food. You're not going to give a gift that's harmful to your children. You're going to provide something good for them, aren't you? And in that context, in verse 11, Matthew 7, 11, he says, if ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, who is in heaven, give good things unto them that ask? God is able to provide for us. God is able to take care of us. And what higher goal does God have than our spiritual well-being? You think about what we've been looking at here. Mostly in providence, we've been dealing with physical provision that God makes. But in Romans 5, and I didn't read James 2, but it makes the same point as Romans 5, God provides for us spiritually. Think about the Scriptures. Think about, as we talked about this morning, the church and how we're to be an encouragement and strength to one another. And you think about all the things that God has arranged and provided for our spiritual well-being. God has provided in that area as well. Now, it's important to note, as we study this topic of providence, that not everything is an act of specific providence. There are some people, even members of the Lord's body, who have gotten so hung up on this, very much like the Pentecostals almost, where one brother I know of who said, God gave me a parking spot, near the front door to the grocery store. And I'm thankful for God for that. Now let me ask you the question. Does that have anything to do with the necessity of life or with your spiritual well-being? Then why in the world would God care where you parked in the parking lot? You see, people sometimes get these ideas in their head and they go way beyond what the Bible says about it. You see, providence deals with the necessities of our life, the things we need to live physically, and with our spiritual well-being. And people leap beyond that to these strange conclusions. It may make them feel good to think, well, God's caring for me in a special sense. Well, that's true regardless of whether you park up front or way back there. That doesn't change it. That's just like a young man I spoke to years ago, a Pentecostal fellow. We're sitting on the bench in the college campus I was at, and it was an open area, and it was a cloudy day, and the clouds rolled back, and the sun shone, and he looked up and said, "Oh, Lord, smiling on me." He took the sunshine coming out as a specific smile from God. Now, that's leaping to conclusions we don't have, isn't it? You know, that sunshine shone on him just like it shone on people around there. It might have been smoking or fornicating or whatever. Sun shone on them too, didn't it? That's general providence. There's general processes of things going on that includes everybody. And we leap to some conclusions sometimes that are not necessary conclusions. That's not right. But let's look, first of all, in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, because here we understand that there is such a thing as time and chance. Not everything that happens, not everything that is maybe pleasing to me or pleasing to you or every time the sun shines is a specific instance of God's blessing upon us specifically. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 11, it says, "I return to Saul under the sun, that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to the men of understanding, nor yet favor to the men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all." This is an inspired writer that says there's processes in play and time and chance are included in that. Now you think about, we talk about this sometimes, if you jumped off the Empire State Building, God's not going to change natural law. Gravity's going to work, isn't it? And you're going to get hurt. There are things that happen that are just part of the natural processes of life. Now, we can take lessons from that and learn from that because of what the Scriptures tell us and the insights it gives us. And there are times, as we mentioned, and we'll look at this, where special providence is in place, as we noticed with Paul, that God, his brother or sister's son was in the right place, right time to hear about that plot and spare his life. But that's not something that we know of. And, you know, God doesn't reveal all those details to us. And we can't assume every event in life is that very thing, a special providence. Sometimes things that happen are not because of God. God's system includes the activities of Satan. Now, we're not going to spend a lot of time reading this, but Job chapter 1, verses 6 through 19. Satan comes to God and challenges him concerning Job. And God allows Satan a measure of influence and control upon Job's life. What happened? Foreign nation, people came, stole his cattle and his goods. Storm came, destroyed the house where his children were. His health deteriorated and he began to have all these boils and things on his body. Think about that. Any of those miracles in themselves? No. No, it wasn't. Is it because God hated him that happened? No, that wasn't it either. His friends that came and sat there with him accused him of every conceivable sin they could think of. Job, surely you're to blame for all of this. You've done something and God is specifically punishing you for your sins. They thought it was specific providence. But they were wrong, weren't they? It was Satan behind that, trying to destroy Job, get him to curse God and die. But he didn't do that. So sometimes people read into events and think it's specifically God acting, but it's not. And we don't need to assume that. In Esther chapter 4, if you remember the story of Esther, this is while the land of Judah, the people of Judah, had been brought into Babylonian captivity. And there was this plot by this man to destroy the Jews. He did. Mordecai was one of the Jews there in captivity, and he didn't bow to this certain man, and this man got mad, and so he plotted to get them all destroyed. And then here's Esther, Mordecai's niece, I believe it was, but he's been taking care of her as his own daughter. Things work out so that she is now married to the highest ruler in the land who's able to deal with this problem. And Mordecai comes to her and tries to encourage her and says, you better do something about this plot to destroy the Jews. In Esther chapter 4 and verse 13, it says, then Mordecai bade them return answer unto Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews, for if thou altogether hold thy peace at this time, then will relief and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. God will provide. We know what His will is and what His word is concerning His people. God will take care of it. But thou and thy father's house will perish, and who knoweth whether thou art not come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Esther, this is not something I could say for sure. You're here specifically for this reason, but you better take advantage of it. Take advantage of it. It's an opportunity to save this people, this God's people. God will do it one way or the other, but you can do it this way. Or you can try to buy your time and be destroyed with your people. Now notice the way Mordecai approached this. He didn't presume to know what wasn't revealed. He knew what was revealed about God's people and God's will for that nation, and he knew they'd be taken care of. That doesn't mean they couldn't suffer. That didn't mean they couldn't, some of them, die. Even him and his niece. At the same time, he didn't presume to know, Esther, you're here because God put you here to do this particular thing of saving your people. He didn't presume to know that, but he said, you better use it to the best of your opportunities and abilities to do that very thing. You know, remember where we started off about God's providence providing for our necessities in life? Yet that doesn't mean that we don't have anything to do in connection with that. Doesn't the Bible say, if a man will not work, neither let him eat? God provides the things we need so that we can have food and covering, but we have to cooperate with what God has provided. Yes, God is going to deliver His people, Esther, but He's provided such a thing that, you know, you have an opportunity here. You better work with God to accomplish what we know is according to His will. But He didn't presume. He didn't say in such a way that, well, I know this and I know that. Look over in Philemon chapter 1. Even Paul, an inspired apostle, made statements to the effect that there are things that he didn't know for sure, but he could judge by principle that they were very likely. In Philemon, verse 15, speaking of this man who was a slave that had run away from his master, Paul encountered the slave after he'd run away, converted him to Christ, and lo and behold, turns out this man, he's converted to Christ. Paul knew his master and had already converted him to Christ. Philemon. So now he sends this now Christian who's a slave with this letter back to his master. And Paul's now speaking to Philemon. He says, for perhaps he, this Onesimus, the slave, was therefore parted from thee for a season, that thou shouldst have him forever, no longer a servant, but more than a servant, a brother beloved, especially to me. Paul says, perhaps he was parted from you for this reason. Perhaps he left you so that he would run into me and I could convert him. Now, notice Paul didn't say, well, I know this is true. He said, perhaps. This is not a matter of specific revelation that Paul absolutely knew. God revealed it to him. But he understood God works that way. God is able to bring people to the right place and the right time so that they can hear the truth and be converted. Now, you think about that for a moment. Sometimes God might bring somebody across your path. Maybe they're the ones to bring up a religious statement or question. Or maybe it's you and I that needs to make it. But you could be the one that needs to be speaking in order to convert somebody. You could be the one who needs to be that influence to put them in the right way. It's not something we can say, well, I know at this instance, this is specifically the case. There's a lot of people in the world we run into. But, like Mordecai back in Esther 4,
Who knows? But you better use the opportunities that are there. We know God's principles. We know He set things in order and arranged things so that they can do that. And we don't know all the details behind the scenes. But we better use the opportunities that we have according to His will. We can only be certain of what God has revealed in the Scriptures. We know what is revealed there. It's true. We know the principles that guide us. But to go beyond that is to assume and presume. Just like the illustration I used of a brother who said a specific parking lot was given to him by God. Now that is absolutely wrong, presumptuous, and foolish. Because God hasn't revealed any such thing. And it doesn't. I don't see how that would fit with, again, our physical necessities or our spiritual well-being. But these other things we're talking about, we see how that works together. That God, through His providence and working, setting things in motion, can bring things to pass. Now, I've already mentioned this a couple times through here, but I'll just review it real quickly as our last point. God's providence does not rule out our part, our obligations in the matter of obtaining physical things or spiritual growth or taking opportunities to teach other people. We understand Matthew 6, verse 11, Jesus said this prayer to the Father, the model prayer. He says, "Give us this day our daily bread." There's your dependence upon what God provides to sustain us physically. That doesn't rule out the fact that 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, "He that will not work, neither let him eat." Or 1 Timothy 5, verse 8 says, "He that provides not for his own is worse than an infidel." Obviously, there's something we need to do in obtaining what God has made available. But God arranges things so that when we do that, it works out. See, God's in control, but He wants us to play our part as well. Trust and obey. In Philippians chapter 2, 12 through 13, he talks about the fact that we need to work out our own salvation. Now, so many people get hung up on God saves us. God's the one that provided the sacrifice. God is the one who's given His grace. Yes, He has. He's done what we could not do. That does not negate the fact that He still says, "Yes, here's what I provided. You need to come get it. You need to accept the gift I've provided for you. Work out your own salvation." God's still in control. God is still the giver. God is still the one who makes it possible where on our own it would not be possible. But He still requires us to do something about it, doesn't He? Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. That's what Philippians 2 says to do. Our conclusion is this, just to summarize our lesson. God provides generally for all. Both those who serve Him and those who don't receive physical blessing. God has arranged this worldly system that way. But God provides specifically for those who love Him. Romans 8:28, all things work together for good for those who love the Lord. There are things that will happen in your life that are for your benefits, specifically in that context, your spiritual maturity. It will test you. It will give you opportunities to grow and to be more mature. We may not always pass those tests, but they're there for our benefit. We cannot interpret every moment, every single event, and each thing as a case of specific providence. We can't do that. Those are not things that are specifically revealed. We know the principle is there. But to assume and presume all these instances is presumption and assumption, not fact. So don't read into it more than this there. We know God's principles. And like Paul, we can say, perhaps this is the case. Or like Mordecai in the Old Testament, it says, who knows whether this is the case, but you better use it. See, that's how we can approach it, in the scriptural and biblical fashion. And also, of course, we have our part to do. God requires us to be active, both in our physical necessities and in our spiritual necessities. And this morning, let's just bring this to the most important application that we can make. That is our spiritual needs. Perhaps this morning you have not yet entered into Christ. We know what the Bible has to say about this water that's standing right back here in this container.
This water in itself does not save. 1 Peter 3:21, it's not the cleansing of the filth of the flesh. The water itself has no power to take away sin. What makes baptism saving? As 1 Peter 3:21 says, baptism doth also now save you. Baptism saves. It's because of, in 1 Peter 3:21, he says, through the resurrected Savior. Jesus, in His authority, said, when you are baptized into My name, I will forgive your sins. That's why baptism saves. And if you have not yet been baptized for the remission of your sins, God in His providence has arranged an opportunity for you to hear the truth, and you know what that Bible says, and you have an opportunity to work out your own salvation. He's laid it on the table. You just need to come and partake it. Why would you refuse such a wonderful gift? If anyone is not saved, it's because they have not taken the opportunities that God has provided. If you've done that and you've entered into Christ through baptism, perhaps in your life you see that there are times you've been faltering and failing and your strength just isn't cutting it. You know, we all face that sometimes. But God, again, in His providence and His wisdom and His love, has arranged a system of things to help us. Not just His Word, which tells us all the things we need to know, but people who follow His Word are coming together in what's called the church and local assemblies. And we're here to be a strength for one another. Perhaps you need to make a public confession of a sin that's known publicly. Or perhaps you just need the prayers of the saints because you need encouragement. You've not been doing as well as you know you should. God has provided. And the question is not whether God cares or not whether there's opportunity. There's opportunity now. The question is, what will you do with what God has provided? Why won't you come while we stand and sing?